The Fire Trap. Chapter 1. Where there's smoke. 10 minutes to midnight, February the 12th. Snow falling and a bitterly cold wind sweeping along the avenue. In the block of flats on the corner, in flat 406, Jenny Hagen sat in front of the television, still wearing her fire service uniform. She had a glass of whiskey in her hand. It was her 35th birthday, and she was celebrating it alone, although celebrating was hardly the right word. She was not watching the television, and in any case, the sound was turned down. She was thinking, turning the same dark thoughts over and over in her mind, about Eric, how they met, how they fell in love, how they got married, how they fought, how they tried and tried again, how they failed. She thought about the divorce. 9 months already. And now, here, she was alone in a one-bedroom flat on her birthday, surrounded by boxes of still unpacked belongings, unable to forget, unable to think of anything else. It was the first important failure of her life, and she could not accept it. She remembered Eric's face, the tears in his eyes, the words he spoke. What kind of marriage is this, Jenny? I never see you, and when you do come home from work, you're exhausted. You have to choose, Jenny. It's your job or me, one or the other. It can't be both. I mean it, you have to choose, me or the job. It was an impossible choice, but in the end she chose. So why could she not live with her decision? Why could she not put the past behind her and move on? How did she become a firewoman anyway? At school, she didn't know what she wanted to do with her life. She was good at maths and sports, not much else. She didn't like being indoors. Maybe that's what decided her. One day in 1988, when she was 18, she saw an ad in the paper and cut it out. When she showed it to her friends and family, their reaction was almost always the same. That's no job for a girl. You can't do that. That's man's work. Be serious, Jenny. Who ever heard of a firewoman? The word doesn't even exist. But Jenny was stubborn. The more she heard that she couldn't do it, that it was impossible for her, the more she wanted to try. Her mum, naturally, was strongly against the idea. If you want to help people and be badly paid for it, she said, why don't you become a nurse? Her father, on the other hand, encouraged her. He said, you can be anything you want to be, darling, if you want it enough. So she joined the fire service. There were 60 recruits in her year. Jenny was the only woman. The training was harder than she expected. Men and women had to be able to perform the same tasks, such as carrying a 75-kilo person at a distance of 100 metres in less than a minute. But Jenny not only succeeded, she finished near the top of her class. Over the next 9 years, she worked in 5 different fire stations, where she was always the only firewoman. Many of her male colleagues couldn't accept that a woman was doing the same job as them. It was as if she was lowering the prestige of the job, making it seem less difficult, less manly, less heroic. The older ones were the worst. Either they viewed her with suspicion, sometimes refusing to talk to her, or they treated her as some kind of a joke. They called her girly. We have some work to do here, girly. Why don't you make us a nice cup of tea, eh? Jenny told her friends that it was like being in an exclusive boys' club, but that now, at least, she was learning some real survival skills. Of course, some of them treat me decently enough, she added. They aren't all sods, thank goodness. And then there was the love of the job, the excitement she felt every time the siren sounded. Rushing to the big red engine, pulling on her fireproof trousers and boots, climbing up into the vehicle, being thrown into the traffic, struggling to keep her balance as she put on her heavy black coat and yellow helmet. The action never stopped. She thought it was the perfect job for her. She loved it. Then, when she was 27, she met Eric, a trainee manager in an insurance company. They got married, and Jenny started to think seriously about the future. She began to study for the fire service examinations and to apply for promotions. Remembering how much she disliked exams at school, she was surprised at how easy everything was now. Slowly but surely, she began to climb the professional ladder. Often she was promoted over the same men who previously called her girly. Now, at age 35, she reflected bitterly, she was successful. Ironically, however, the more successful she became, the less time she spent doing the job she loved. Now she spent most of her time sitting in front of a computer, doing administrative work. Often she worked 15 hours a day, writing reports, reading reports, visiting schools, attending conferences, preparing training courses. The paperwork was endless. How long was it since she sat in the big red fire engine? Years, it seemed. On top of that, she knew that many of the men under her disliked having to take orders from a woman. It was the same old problem. One day, not long ago, she overheard one middle-aged fireman tell another, "She gets paid twice as much as we do, and for what? For sitting on her backside all day long." "Yeah, you're right," the other replied. "Do you think she ever got her hands dirty in her life?" Jenny poured another glass of whiskey. Was it worth it, she asked herself? Was it worth all the years of struggle and effort? Was it worth sacrificing her marriage for? When did I stop believing in myself, she wondered. She lifted her glass of whiskey and carried it to the kitchen, where she poured it into the sink. That's enough self-pity, she told herself. Tomorrow's another day. Things will look better in the morning. At 12:30, she climbed wearily into bed. She woke exactly 5 hours later. Instantly, she recognised a familiar smell. She rose quickly, slipped into her jeans, pulled on her T-shirt. She went into the living room and turned on the light, looking around her. Immediately, she saw the smoke curling under the main door of the flat and around the edges of the doorframe. At that moment, fire alarms started ringing everywhere in the building. Chapter 2. There's Fire. Across the corridor from Jenny, in flat 407, lived Alf and Ethel Davidson, a middle-aged couple. Jenny sometimes met Alf Davidson in the morning, when she was going to work. Alf, who worked for a construction company, was a tall, strong-looking man with a full grey beard. He had a dog, a big brown Alsatian, which he usually took for a morning walk before driving to the building site. One morning, going down in the lift, Jenny said, "That's a nice dog you have. What's his name?" "Her name," he corrected. "It's a she. Her name's Lucky." Jenny patted the dog on the head. Out of the corner of her eye, she noticed that Alf Davidson was studying her uniform. "Are you a copper then, dear?" he asked her. People often confused the two uniforms. Sometimes they even thought she was a traffic warden. "No," she smiled, "I'm a firewoman." "Firewoman?" he asked, clearly astonished. "I didn't know that there was such a thing." "What kind of a job is that for a nice-looking girl like you, eh?" "It's a job," Jenny said simply, putting an end to the conversation. "Always the same old story." On Friday, February the 12th, after work, Alf Davidson went to the pub as usual to have a few pints of beer with his mates. He didn't get home until well after 11 o'clock. His wife, a thin, nervous-looking woman, was waiting up for him. She saw immediately that her husband was drunk, but she knew from past experience that it was better not to comment on this fact. "It's freezing out there," he told her, brushing the snow off his overcoat. "I've never seen such cold weather." "Don't talk so loud," Ethel told him, while helping him out of his coat. "You'll wake little Dickie." "Is he in bed then?" asked Alf. "Of course he is," Ethel replied. "It's nearly 12, you know." Dickie was their grandson, and he was 2.5 years old. Every Friday night he stayed at their place so that the young ones, their son and his wife, could go out and enjoy themselves without worrying about the baby. The Davidsons had a spare room after all, and Dickie was never any trouble. "It's time we were in bed ourselves," Ethel added. "Yeah, all right, you go ahead," he said. "I'll just have one last smoke." He sat down heavily in his favourite armchair and with some difficulty lit a cigarette. "Well, don't sit there half the night," said Ethel, heading for the bedroom. Alone in the living room, Alf puffed at his cigarette. Suddenly he started coughing. He was unable to stop. He put his cigarette in the ashtray beside him and clumsily made his way to the kitchen. He needed something to drink, a glass of water. The water from the tap was as cold as ice, but it helped him to stop coughing. He turned out the lights in the kitchen and in the living room and staggered towards the bedroom. In the ashtray, the cigarette continued to burn. Slowly, the tobacco changed into ash. 2 minutes after Alf Davidson closed the bedroom door behind him, half of the cigarette fell out of the ashtray and rolled onto the carpet. On the floor of the dark living room, a small light glowed. In flat 406, across the corridor, Jenny Hagen was also climbing into bed. Ethel emerged slowly from a deep sleep, not knowing yet if she was awake or dreaming. Something was different. Something was wrong. She listened carefully. Maybe little Dickie was crying in his cot in the next room. But no, she could hear nothing except her husband lying in the bed beside her and snoring heavily, as usual. Curious, she turned on the bedside lamp and rose slowly from the bed. She walked to the bedroom door and opened it. Immediately, large clouds of thick black smoke rushed into the bedroom, blinding her. In seconds, the room was so dark that she could hardly see the bed. She screamed at her husband, "Alf, wake up, wake up! The flat's on fire! For the love of God, wake up!" "The child," she thought. "The child." In terror, choking, her eyes full of tears, she felt her way to the spare bedroom. She lifted the sleeping baby out of his cot and pressed his face against her chest. He began to cry. All around her now, there was dense black smoke. She could see nothing. Where was the door? Where was the hall? Holding the baby in one arm, she felt her way forward with the other. There were cupboards in the hallway, but her hand could not find them. Suddenly, the smoke was too much for her. Her lungs burning, Ethel collapsed against a wall. Still holding the baby tightly to her breast, she slid to the door. At that moment, fire alarms started ringing everywhere in the building. Chapter 3. And more smoke. Jenny ran to the door of her flat and opened it. The corridor was rapidly filling with thick, acrid smoke. She saw where it was coming from instantly. Flat 407. The couple with the big dog. She jumped across the corridor and tried the door. It was locked. She hammered on it with her fists. "Is there anyone in there?" she shouted. "Answer me if you can." Putting her ear to the door, she listened intently. She heard Ethel's voice. It sounded weak and far away. "There's a fire in here. Help us, please." "Open the door," Jenny yelled, trying the door handle repeatedly. But this time there was no answer. Jenny thought hard and fast. Like all the doors in the building, this one was a steel fire door. Without a key or an axe, there was no way she could open it. She had to get the key and fast. The people in 407 could not survive long. But first she had to alert the fire service. Rushing back to her own flat, Jenny grabbed the telephone and dialed 999. "Emergency? Which service do you require?" asked a calm voice at the other end of the line. "Fire and ambulance," Jenny said, speaking very clearly. "There is a fire in the block of flats on the corner of Cypress Avenue." "Please stay on the line, madam," the voice said again. "I can't," Jenny answered. "There are people who need help. Just get a fire engine over here now." She hung up. Without wasting a moment, she raced along the corridor and down the stairs towards the caretaker's flat on the ground floor. Everywhere, worried-looking men and women in pyjamas and dressing gowns were opening their doors and looking around them. "Go outside," Jenny shouted as she ran past them. "There's a fire on the fourth floor. Close your doors and go outside." She was out of breath when she arrived at the caretaker's door. She knocked it loudly with her fist. The caretaker's wife opened it immediately. There's a fire on the fourth floor, Jenny said. I need the keys to 407. There are people trapped inside. Oh dear, said the caretaker's wife. But I don't know where Tom is. He's gone to warn people about the fire, you see. And he's taken the keys with him. He's in the building somewhere, but I don't know where. Jenny thought quickly, then started up the four flights of stairs. When she reached the fourth floor, she saw that now the smoke was only about 1 meter from the ground. Keeping her head low to breathe the air near the floor, she quickly made her way down the smoky corridor. Inside flat 407, Ethel lay with her back against a wall, weak and confused. She spoke softly to the child in her arms. Don't cry, darling, don't cry. It'll be all right, you'll see. Just then, she felt something warm and wet seize her ankle. Reaching down, she realised it was Lucky. The dog could see under the thick smoke that was now filling the flat. The animal was gently but firmly pulling her with his big mouth. Ethel felt the dog's collar. Holding on to it with one hand, she let the Alsatian guide her through the hot, black flat. It took the dog only a few seconds to lead her to the front door. Then it stopped and barked loudly. Ethel still couldn't see anything, but now she could feel one of the hallway cupboards to her right. That meant that the door was in front of her. She reached out blindly and suddenly felt her hand touching something familiar. The door handle, the key. Suddenly the door was open and Ethel and the child emerged from the flat. Still blinded by the smoke, Ethel staggered down the corridor. A few seconds later she met Jenny. Keep your head down, close to the ground, Jenny told her, guiding her towards the stairs. When they reached the stairs, some neighbours came forward to take them down to safety. But as they started to go down, Ethel suddenly turned round and cried, My husband's still in there. Jenny looked up the long corridor. The smoke was now about 75 centimetres from the ground. Take them outside, she said, and turned back. Chapter 4 Into the Blackness. In the freezing car park outside the building, Ethel Davidson watched the clouds of smoke coming from her flat. Her face was black with soot. Still holding her grandchild, she prayed for her husband. Inside the building, Jenny was crawling on her hands and knees along the corridor. She knew that soon there wasn't going to be any more air to breathe. As she struggled forward, she asked herself how she was going to find Alf Davidson. Was he in one of the bedrooms? If so, where were they? 407 was a two-bedroom flat, but was the layout similar to her own one-bedroom flat? This was not her first serious fire, of course, but it was one thing to fight a fire wearing protective clothes and breathing apparatus, assisted by trained colleagues. It was another thing to be heading into one alone, in T-shirt and jeans. Reaching flat 407, Jenny looked through the open doorway. She saw nothing but clouds of black smoke. If she was going to find anyone alive, she had only minutes to do it. If the heat and pressure of the smoke in here continues to increase, she thought, there will be an explosion. If there is, it'll use up all the remaining oxygen instantly. Then she thought, damn it, I've come this far, and if I don't find him soon, I won't get out of here either. She lowered her head and crawled through the doorway into the blackness. Mr. Davidson, she called out, choking on the smoke. Where are you? She came to another doorway. The floor was tiled, so that was either the kitchen or the bathroom. She continued until she came to a corridor on her left. Maybe it led to the bedrooms. Mr. Davidson, she called again. Mr. Davidson. She heard someone moaning and crawled towards the sound. Then she saw something, a man's foot. She moved quickly towards the man, seizing his shoulders. She pulled hard, but he didn't move. She pulled again with all her strength, but he still didn't move. It was too dark to see further than the man's head, so she crawled forward. Then she saw the problem. The man, only half conscious but terrified, was holding tightly with both hands to the foot of a heavy wooden cupboard. Jenny yelled, Let go! You have to let go! But the man held on. Struggling with his fingers, Jenny shouted again, Mr. Davidson, if you want to live, you have to let go. The man opened his hands. Then, taking him firmly by the arms, Jenny pulled him towards the door. He was incredibly heavy, but Jenny knew that there was going to be an explosion in the flat. Fear gave her added strength as she pushed backwards with her feet and pulled the man towards the door. Only a metre to go. Somehow she managed to get him into the corridor. A moment later, she heard the explosion in the flat. She continued to drag Davidson down the corridor, keeping her head low to breathe. The journey to safety seemed to take forever. But now Jenny could hear the scream of sirens outside. Fire engines were rushing through the streets to the scene of the fire. When she reached the stairs and could breathe more freely, she felt for Alf Davidson's pulse. He had bad burns on his legs and hands. His hair and beard had burned off on one side. His body was covered with soot, but he was alive. Some of the neighbours came forward to help. "He needs air," Jenny said. "Can somebody take him outside?" As she watched two young men carrying Alf Davidson down the stairs, Jenny suddenly remembered the Davidson's big dog. "Has anybody seen their dog?" she asked the neighbours. "A big Alsatian." The neighbours shook their heads. "Oh no," she said, "I have to go back." "It's impossible. It's crazy," the neighbours shouted. "Don't be a fool. You can't do it." "Yes, I can," Jenny said. Chapter 5. Into the Light. At the back of her mind, Jenny knew that her neighbours were right. This third journey down the long, dark corridor was the most dangerous of all. "Absolutely crazy," she heard their voices calling behind her. "Come back. It's impossible. Don't do it." Then she remembered. It was not the first time she was doing something others said was impossible. But this time she had to crawl along her belly like a snake, her lips practically touching the floor. The deadly smoke was only a few centimetres from the ground. "Here, girl, here, girl. Lucky, lucky," she began to call as she neared the flat 407. But there was no answer. When she arrived again at the doorway, she looked in. Jenny saw only an inferno of flames. She knew there was no hope. "If the poor animal's in there," she thought, "it's too late to help it now." Jenny began to cough. Looking behind her, she saw that the corridor was completely black, completely filled with smoke. There was no way she could get back to the stairs. She crawled across the corridor and into her own flat, kicking the door shut behind her. Her flat too was filled with smoke, although nothing was burning. She threw open the balcony windows in the living room and turned on the fan over the cooker in the kitchen. Quickly, she soaked some towels in water and pushed them against the bottom of her door. As she was doing this, she heard a noise behind her, a low crying noise. She turned around. The dog was lying on its side on the floor behind her, looking at her with big, wet eyes. "You came in here," Jenny said, smiling with relief. "You came in here to hide." Kneeling down, she stroked the dog's head. The animal rose weakly and licked her face. "It's all right," she said. "I'm going to get you out of here." She led the dog out to the balcony so it could breathe some fresh air. But then, looking up, she saw angry orange flames roaring above her head. Now the roof was on fire. Quickly pulling the animal back inside, Jenny considered the situation. "I can make a rope out of sheets," she thought, "and maybe climb down to the balcony of the flat below and jump. I might break a leg, but what about Lucky?" She couldn't take the dog, and she wasn't going to leave it. As she was thinking, she heard a fire engine pulling into the car park. She ran to the balcony and shouted to the men in uniform below. Moments later, she watched as the long ladder rose slowly from the engine to her balcony. A fireman climbed to the top of it. Jenny's face was black with soot, so it was impossible for the fireman to recognise her. "It's all right, love," he shouted to her. "Come over here nice and slowly and I'll carry you down on my shoulder." "No," said Jenny, "carry the dog down on your shoulder. I'll climb down myself. I'm a firewoman." A week later, Jenny went to visit Alf Davidson in hospital. "What can I say to the woman who saved my life?" he asked her. "I heard you saved my dog too. I don't know how I can ever thank you for that. You don't have to thank me, she said. It's all part of the service. Alf didn't remember much about the fire, but he did remember one thing. It was something you said, he told her. You said, if you want to live, you have to let go. Did I say that? Jenny asked. Yes, you did, Alf replied. And it's true in more ways than one, you know. I mean, since the fire, I've let go of a few old ideas I used to have about fire women and all that. It was a bright sunny day. When she left the hospital, Jenny noticed that the snow was beginning to melt. It'll be spring soon, she thought. A new beginning. For the first time in ages, she felt confident and happy. She knew who she was again.